Horns up, metalheads. What you're about to hear is a rebroadcast of the October 30th live stream with Dee Gregorio. Check out Dee Gregorio on dgregorio.bandcamp.com. Use the code Radioactive Metal to save 10% through November 6th. And again, just a little bit of a heads up, the interviews here are full, but we did reduce the amount of the songs just to kind of give you a taste and also contain time here. So check out Dee Gregorio, dgregorio.bandcamp.com. And of course, don't forget, support the show and support our wonderful sponsor, True Call Coffee.
Welcome to Radioactive Metal. This is Radioactive Metal, your source for news, views, tunes, and interviews. Here are your hosts, Snowy, Rock, Corrine, and Aaron.
Horns up, metalheads. This is Aaron with the Radioactive Metal Podcast. Hopefully, the snowman is going to join us a little bit later, but tonight we are doing our first ever live stream. We're super excited about this. It's been a year of firsts for us. 2020 has been a strange, strange time. The month of October is literally like we're living in a horror movie right now because we started with a full moon. We're ending with a full moon. There's a news story about bodies being composted in a warehouse in Oregon somewhere. I think it's Oregon, somewhere like that. Bodies filling a warehouse. That screams sci-fi. So that's what's going on. That's where we're at. But tonight, live in the studio, I have Sue Decree with us. Sue, how you doing?
I am doing well, Aaron. How are you?
I'm doing good. That was a big delay. I'm like, huh, I wonder if she's still there.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm here. I've got friends here. I've got wine. I'm not responsible.
I'm so glad you have wine because I am kicking back a beer because that's what we do here on Radioactive Metal. So horns up, metalheads. Go get yourselves a beer or whatever your choice of drink is, even if it's water. Get a glass because we are going to sit back and listen to the House of Gregory debut album here. Well, House of Gregory is the album. Dee Gregorio's debut album. And for anyone who's interested, go to dgregorio.bandcamp.com. You can find the album there. And if you're interested in purchasing it tonight, you can actually get 10% off by using the code Radioactive.
Oh, and wait, what? And wait, there's more.
Oh, and there's more? Tell me what's
and
more.
And there's more. I've actually talked to one of my friends and mentors, Emily from Mike Pittsburgh, micpgh.com. And we are actually going to be putting up our plaques. We have actually little, what we call shiplaps, as if you would have taken a piece of the House of Gregory out. And we are actually going to be putting those on Bandcamp either this evening or tomorrow as well. So that 10% is good
Rock
on those as well.
That's so cool. Cool. All right. So I don't know about you, but I say without further ado, let's get into the opening track, You Know Me. Anything you'd like to say to kind of kick this track off there, Sue?
Oh, my. You know, this song is just such a part of me. I actually wrote this. One of my cousins, older cousins, had died several years ago, and she actually showed up at my apartment. And while I'm like looking at this ghost in the middle of my apartment, I'm like, who are you? And she's just like, you know me. It's okay. You know me. So that's actually where I got this song from. It was actually a real live ghost experience.
What a way to kick off on the eve of Halloween here. That's quite a kickoff. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, You Know Me. And that song was Mystery and Mayhem, track two from House of Gregory, chapter one. Sue, are you back?
I am back.
I was hoping, because I realized I forgot to text you and be like, hey, we're going to be back in a couple seconds.
Hey, because, you know, I was actually paying attention for once.
Oh, that's good. You know, because as I said earlier, this is our first live stream. And while we have, you know, practiced and done all sorts of prep, you know, the best laid plans of mice and men, right?
So are usually about equal.
Yeah, we're checking it all out here. So I have to tell you, Sue, Mystery and Mayhem is my absolute favorite song on this album. I think it was Dust in the Attic for a while, but this one I just love. And I think it's those sci-fi keyboardy kind of lines that you have going on in there.
So funny thing about the keyboard lines, I had all of my keyboard lines written, but I needed somebody that could play just a little bit better than I can play keyboards. So I sent them to Bob Horwat, who immediately deleted all of my keyboard lines and did his own.
I got to say, I love him. I love him. I was excited that this song is also an instrumental on the Bandcamp version of the album. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was. It was. This song is actually a lot of fun to play. This song is a lot of fun to play. When we were sitting in the studio, there was just so much going on. I think there were 12 different keyboard lines and like four or five different guitar lines. And we were sitting there sweating, trying to get them to, because we didn't want to leave anything out because they were just all so good.
Yeah.
Poor Andrew. Poor Andrew over at Fire K. I think the guy is probably in therapy because of me right now.
Well, I know I have been in therapy because of you for years, but that's a whole different story.
Well, yeah, and it's probably also my fault that you're in therapy. But, you know, again.
You know, it's kind of been the occupational hazard, I think, sometimes of knowing you. But
it is. It truly is.
I digress. So you and I have known each other, man, since somewhere in the 90s, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it's crazy to think that we're going on 30 years.
I think it's longer than that, isn't it? Isn't it more like...
92.
Well, it was 92. Okay, so, it was 92 because I had lost my first 100 pounds between 92 and 93.
Okay, and that's when we went to the NAMM show.
It is.
Yeah, was it NAMM 93? I don't know why I thought that was 94.
It was NAMM 90. It was 93 or 94, and we camped at the edge of town.
Yeah.
Yeah, in old musty tents. That was fun. And then we had to be up and fresh and at the NAMM show.
You know, growing up in the middle of nowhere where I did, because I mean, where you lived, you know, in our hometown is much more developed than where I lived. Like I was like literally out in farm country. And so I spent so many nights in a tent anyway, just because I could.
Right.
And a Boy Scout and all this sort of stuff. So for me, I'm just like, okay. Like wherever we had to go, like I know how to do this. We're good, you know.
Whereas I prefer indoor plumbing.
I was okay with it, man. I mean, it was Tennessee in the summertime. It was really gorgeous. I mean, I don't think we could ask for a better time of year. I mean, thankfully we really didn't have any rain when we were there either.
We did not. Actually, the weather was actually really good that weekend.
Yeah, it was great.
It was actually really, really fun, and that was both of our first time at any kind of a music convention that big. And that was just so much fun. So much fun.
All right. So I got to ask, as I went through this album again today and I'm listening to the themes and all that sort of stuff. And I have to point out that one of the things that I really, really love about this is that if our listeners go to dgregoriomusic.com, you can actually find the story for this album.
Yes. Right? Yes.
I
like to refer to it, heavy metal Scooby-Doo.
We could call it that. I mean, like, I feel like there's so much art that goes into music, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's so much. I mean, like, when you write lyrics, you're trying to tell some sort of a story a lot of times in shorthand. And I just love the fact that you have a story that accompanies it, the lyrics on the other side, and it just really gives you something more. You know, like as a music fan in general, like I love when bands do this kind of thing. And so I'm like, I'm just totally geeking out here. But as I've been reviewing all this, like the thing I got to ask is, so were you a D&D girl growing up? Like, did you play Dungeons and Dragons?
I did. I was the renegade in the family. So my family, as you know, we're all very, very pragmatic, practical, earthbound people. And then there was me. I am, not that I don't get along with my family, but I'm the black sheep of my family in just so many ways. I'm the artistic one. I'm the one that went chasing after fairies and unicorns and dungeons and played Dungeons and Dragons. And we actually used to have a group. We met, I think, once a week, and we did all kinds of role-playing games. We were doing the Marvel games when they first came out, way back when dinosaurs ruled the earth. We did Dungeons and Dragons. We did all of those games way back when.
I was wondering, because the alliteration as you write, like the story that you paint, I'm like, I wonder if there's like a lot of like fantasy
stuff.
Well,
I actually started writing.
Oh, hang on. Well, I'm sorry. I totally missed that. What was that?
I actually started writing. My dad, I don't know if you knew this, but my dad is actually an accomplished writer. My dad is actually an English major, and he's a highly accomplished writer. And he's done technical writing. He's done grant writing. And he's actually done some fiction writing and some storytelling kind of writing. And he is actually a very accomplished writer. So it actually kind of runs in the family. I started writing short stories and plays and things like that when I was 6, 7, 8, 9.
Wow. Okay. So you've just really had this creative thing going for a long, long time.
Yes.
And just trying to get it out in different ways. Mm-hmm. And like, I've started to say, like, I recognize the fantasy portion of it, because I love that stuff as a kid. But again, mm-hmm. like, it's not like we grew up that far apart, but we were two different school districts. And you've seen where I grew up. There's nobody there, you know, 30, 40 years ago. Like, it was me and horses and cows. Like, that was it, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was something where I wanted to do all these things. I wanted to try D&D because my friends were trying it, all this sort of stuff, but I never got to. So like, now I'm finally trying to get into Magic the Gathering with my own children.
Right.
So see how that goes, because I'm trying to also encourage their creativity and that sort of stuff. All right. So just looking at the chat here, thank you everybody who's been joining and for the chats that you're putting in there. If you guys have questions for Sue, like I said, in the chat, go ahead, put them in the chat. We'll get to stuff. Like in between songs, all that sort of thing here. I see that Lady Catherine joined us. So Kat, shout out. How's it going? Kat actually mixed a song for me, and mm-hmm. I met Kat because of Sue.
Well, actually, Kat mixed and mastered the Pandemic, the version of Pandemic that is on the Bandcamp site as yeah. well.
Well, her work on that's why I wanted to contact her, because mm-hmm. I remember when you sent me that back, I'm like, oh, holy crap, who mixed this? Like, I love that track. Yeah, I love that track.
Yeah, and I'm gonna have to say, if you haven't listened to any of Kat Corelli's music, you need to do that. There are very few times in life where I will say I wish I had written that. Several of those instances have come listening to some of the stuff that she's written. It's incredible. It's proggy. It's like prog rock meets metal meets EDM meets classical. I don't know. It's so hard to describe, but it's so good. It's so good.
Rock on, man. Rock on. So everybody check out Kat Corelli as well as De Gregorio here. And I'm sure Kat's on Bandcamp. Kat, if you want to drop a link in the chat for us, might as well, since we're talking about it. But Sue, you want to get on to another song here? We'll kick into Not Myself.
Absolutely. So here is the cool thing about Not Myself. One of my singers, Kat Lewandowski, Kat and I were recording scratch tracks in Kat's church. I know a lot of cats for some reason. I think Kat Aceto is in the chat as well. So I know a lot of cats for some really bizarre reason. But Kat Lewandowski and I were sitting and we were recording. And months later, I'm listening back and I hear something weird after we record the drums back in July of 17. And I'm hearing this, and it's kind of this weird juxtaposition, because we just recorded the drums and I had slapped guitars and other, you know, scratch vocals and things over top of that, just so I could get an idea of where the song was. And I kept hearing this thing, and I thought it was in the drum track because we had like a dozen people or something. And at the recording, we had like two audio engineers, the producer at the time, the ex-producer was there, the former producer. We had a couple of my students were there. My accountant was actually there, or my, at that point, future accountant was there. We had a photographer in the studio. Of course, the drummer was there. I was there. We had so many people in the studio. I thought something just bled into the drum mics at some point. And I was listening to the drum tracks, and there's nothing on the drum tracks. And so I start going track by track, trying to figure out where this weird thing is. And there's this, on the vocal track that Kat and I recorded in the church, there's this word or the voice or something that comes in before she starts singing. And both of us were like 4 or 5 feet away from the microphone at this time. And like, there's this voice just right up against the microphone. It sounds like it's dropping the F-bomb. I cannot verify or deny, but it sounds like it's dropping the F-bomb, like right up against the mic. So we actually caught an EVP while we were trying to do scratch vocals for this, and we put it in the song, because when you're doing a song about a haunted house and you catch an EVP, you put it on this, you put that on the song.
Rock on. All right. Well, Sue, that's a heck of a story. And without further ado, here is Not Myself.
Can feel the glow.
All right. And that was Dark as Night. And Sue, I can hand it to you. Both at the end of Not Myself and Dark as Night, like the end is just as exciting as the rest of the song. And I mean, like a lot of times, you know, there's just fade outs. Like, how do you end a song? Mm-hmm. And I was listening to this album again today, and just Not Myself and Dark as Night, both the endings just grabbed me.
So one of my criteria for trying to figure out if I like a song is, would I listen to this if it weren't me? And so when I get something that's really boring, I'm like, no, I wouldn't listen to that if I weren't me. So I usually end up scrapping those songs. But yeah, I do try and make sure that there's an actual ending. And you know this, I am classically trained. I am jazz trained. I am somewhat
slightly OCD.
Slightly OCD, only slightly OCD, and somewhat flamenco trained. So I've got all of these really great music forms underneath me that I just, there just needs to be a wrap up to the song. The song is a story. It has a beginning, it has a middle, it has an end. So it needs to end. And I don't like fade outs for that reason. I always try and end the song.
Yeah. And I gotta say, man, I really dig them. I really, really dig them. All right. So
also I was trying to write a song a week. So
at
some point.
Right. I remember that challenge when you're doing that. That's right, man. You're cooking some butt on that. So I have a question about like the next record, right? So this is chapter one, and I know you've already got chapter two essentially written, I believe. We just need to start production of it.
Yes.
I just saw the flamingo train. That's great. Like that could be like another, that could be for the Swiss Mistresses flamingo.
That train. Could be for our Swiss Mistresses project. Yes, it is really funny because my flamenco teacher did pronounce it flamingo.
That's actually kind of a
weird throwback. Thank you for that, Todd.
Oh, that's just a blast. Okay. But anyway, where was I going to say? Oh yeah. So I was curious to know, like, I know you assembled a band for this particular project.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to continue with this band, or is this going to be something where you know, look at the project, look at what you want to accomplish, and assemble a different group of musicians based on that goal?
Well, here's the thing. I have actually spoken to the drummer, the keyboardist already, and the singer already. All three of them are on board. And I have not actually reached out to Nico, who was my bassist on this one. But I'm planning on reaching out to Nico to see if he is available as well, because I think this turned out fantastically.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like,
when I first heard Jeremy's drum lines against my songs, I was like, ooh, that sure does not sound like Logic Drummer at all. That actually sounds really good.
Well, and here's something that I noticed, right? Like, I'm listening to the drums on this, and there are times I'm like, did Sue program this and get really good samples? Because I remember you saying you had a live drummer, but I've been making music with you for a very long time now, right? Mm-hmm. And essentially, for anyone...
And I believe you described my drum programming as an octopus falling down a flight of stairs with a drum set.
That's exactly what I was going to get to, right? I was going to say, for anyone who's not familiar with Sue before this, right, her drum lines were involved, to say the least. And it really was like there was an octopus behind the kit, right? And it's like, no, nobody could pull that off. And I'm listening to this stuff, I'm like, no, this sounds exactly like something you would program. Like, and the feel and the vibe is there, man. So that's awesome. Hats off.
So the only, and I think we're going to, since we're doing two songs, the next two songs should be Dust in the Attic and Writing on the Wall. So on Writing on the Wall, Jeremy Papai, our illustrious and very talented drummer, actually did kind of a drum battle with himself in the studio. So we had him record one set of drums, focusing on toms and kicks and the lows. And then we had him record another set of drums throughout the whole song, focusing on the snares and the cymbals and the highs. And we actually kind of mixed those two together. So he did actually drum battle himself on Writing on the Wall.
That's pretty cool. So I can't wait to get to that here. So how about our next track, Dust in the Attic? Why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about it?
So Dust in the Attic is actually one of the completely fictional, well, mostly fictional songs. As you are aware, a lot of what I wrote on House of Gregory is actually derived from personal experience. Dust in the Attic is mostly fictional, although I have had the occasional former relative or deceased relative show up and say, oh, hey, you need to look for this thing over there. And then you'd wake up and you'd find it. So I have had that happen a few times, but that's basically where we're at in the story. Kind of everybody shows up at the haunted mansion. And, you know, they're getting little tidbits of how to put the mystery together. So there is kind of a protagonist in the story for anyone who hasn't read it yet. And that is kind of analogous to my great-grandmother. My great-grandmother has shown up on rare occasions, but when she does, she's quick, to the point, very poignant. This is what you need to do. This is what you need to look for. I am out of here. And so this is kind of based on my great grandma. The ghostly protagonist is based on my great grandmother, who shows up, gives you just the information you need, and then disappears.
Sounds like your great grandmother and you are a lot alike.
Pretty much. Yeah, that's the German part of the family.
That's very German.
This is what you need. This is what you are going to do. I am leaving. Goodbye.
Oh my goodness. Like I love like talking about like the old German relatives. Like my I think it was my grandfather on my mom's side, his mother was German, like off the boat German, right? And she was I think my mom told me she was like 5 foot, maybe possibly 4'11". But she kept all these men that were way taller than her in line. She'd just be the ID boss. And she'd be like shaking her wooden spoon at them. ID boss, you know?
Okay. So that's totally off talking. The other side of the family, on the Italian side of the family, yeah. My Aunt Caroline was actually married to going to take a bit of a dark turn here for a minute, but she was actually married to a very abusive man. And she waited patiently until all of the children moved out. And then he started his nonsense again, and she grabbed the cast iron frying pan and whack right upside the head. My dad and his cousin ended up having to carry my great uncle to the hospital in there. You know, you grab the head, I'll grab the feet. We're carrying him to the emergency room.
Holy crap.
I have actually a long, my German great grandmother was also a very strong person. So I have a long line of, thankfully, long line of very strong women in the family.
Oh, yeah. That's obvious just from like between talking to you and your mom. Mm-hmm. Yeah, neither one of you take crap from anybody. All right.
This is true.
Without further ado then, let's hear Dust in the Attic.
Never thought about the careless world.
Writing on the Wall. And I gotta say, that guitar groove right at, I think it's like 4 minutes 47 seconds, is absolutely sick. Oh my goodness, Sue. Just that's, man, that's a groove. I really, really dig that.
Yes, that was one of the hardest songs that I've written. It was it was, I wrote the song and I don't know how I wrote the song. And I know that sounds weird, but somehow or other I wrote this riff and then I was like, okay, how do I recreate this riff? It was one of those things where I was just like in the groove and this thing came out and I'm like, what the bleepy bleep 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 did I just play? And can I play it again?
Yeah, man, I just dig it. I dig it. So I was thinking as I'm listening to this, this is a headphone album.
Mm-hmm.
Because I like the first few times I listened to it on speakers.
Right.
And that's how I listen to everything. Like I'm not a big headphone guy. And as I've been listening to it through the headphones tonight as we broadcast, I'm like, oh, holy crap. Oh, like I'm catching all kinds of things I didn't catch before. I'm like, oh damn, this is some good stuff.
And you know, I'm gonna blame Bob Horwat for that. So Bob is the keyboard player. And I sent this stuff to Bob. And Bob is a blues and country guy. So Bob was completely out of his element on this. And I don't know what inspiration. I think he took the Scooby-Doo, the heavy metal Scooby-Doo thing literally, and he just literally ran with it. When he called the one day, or he messaged me the one day and said, do you mind if I use a theremin on Mystery and Mayhem? I'm like, I love you. I totally love you. No, I don't mind if you use a theremin.
Okay, so that's how he did those sounds. Because I'm like, man, I couldn't figure that out. That's awesome.
So I'm actually going to address this in voice rather than trying to text. But Kat Corelli, because I have so many cats on the chat right now.
Yeah.
But Kat Corelli says, please don't drag on the next album. Do it sooner than 2 years from now.
Oh yeah.
Actually already working on it. I've actually reached out to the other artists and we're working on, you know, we're working on it. I'm going to get the singer back on board. Bob's back on board for keyboards. I haven't talked to Nico yet. I believe Nico has moved to Indiana. So I have to see if he has a way to record and send some tracks that way. And then, of course, I talked to Jeremy and Jeremy's on board. So it looks like the same band is all on board. I just have to sell enough albums to go back into the studio.
Rock on. And speaking of albums, that's something I wanted to plug. It's been a while. dgregorio.bandcamp.com, right? To go buy the album. You can buy there. And if you use the code radioactive, you can save 10%. And when you get the digital version of the album through Bandcamp, there is actually bonus material, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. But so I had a question about like the new album, because as I'm listening to this album and like I know it's almost like we're putting the cart before the horse, but I'm curious to see where your mind is going, because this is a very lush arranged album, right? It's very symphonic. There's a lot of things going on. There's a lot of parts coming in and out. And I was curious if chapter two is going to include like any additional instrumentation, like possibly a cellist or like a harpsichord player, like just curious where you're going.
So the interesting thing is that you mentioned harpsichord. Harpsichord is one of my favorite instruments of all time.
Because
I love a harpsichord. It's like a guitar, but with keyboards. I love a harpsichord. There's actually a harpsichord intro on song number 8 on this one, Vice and Valor. There's actually a harpsichord intro on that.
Rock on.
But as far as the other instrumentation, the next half of the album, and I can say this since it's already written, is actually takes a little proggier turn. This album was the straight up, in your face, balls to the wall rocker. This is just like, I am going to bang on this gosh darn guitar as hard and as loud as I can. And then the next one actually takes a little bit of a proggier turn. There are a couple of songs on there. There are a couple of songs on there that hit the 7, 8, 9 minute mark. So the next album is actually takes a little bit darker turn. because there are some darker moments that I kind of dealt with. And as you know, this album was a lot about me dealing with my own demons through the facade, if you will, of a haunted house. And there are some darker things that pop up in the next half. So it's going to be really interesting, and it's going to be even more interesting to see if I can actually play my guitar parts.
Yeah, you had some intricate stuff on this. Like, I remember listening to like the early tracks and mixes, and like, geez, there's a lot happening.
There was a lot happening, and there's a lot happening, and there are a couple of places in the album where people are like, you know, I don't get the point of that guitar solo. Well, it's not a guitar solo. It's a guitar part designed to add chaos, because when I was writing this, my brain was in total chaos mode. I had, as you are aware, because we talk a lot, my, you know, I sat down in January of 16, and I said to myself, I'm going to write a song a week. I'm tired of the day job grind. I'm tired of not being able to spend any time with my guitar. I'm tired of not being able to do anything creative. It's literally, I'm at a soul sucking day job. And I, at least one song a week, I just sat down and I crunched it out and I banged it out. And at the end of that year, there were some very interesting things going through. My art was very cathartic at that point. It still is, but there were a lot of things that went through my brain that had never crossed before, that I had never dealt with before.
Yeah, some heavy, heavy stuff. And it's funny, because I remember, because you started this shortly after I moved down here. Because I can remember the two of us, like when you were visiting one of your aunts, I think somewhere down in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
The two of us sitting on the couch in the living room, you know, cracking a bottle of wine and going through some of these songs. And just like, oh yeah, okay. This is some heavy duty stuff. And right. I mean, you've always been a very intricate player.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it's
actually
funny, like, talking about adding chaos. Like, when I think about the early stuff that we used to do, you know, I mean, heck, back when we were still sequencing stuff on the Apple IIe, you know, mm-hmm. like there was always that chaos going on, and you've always had a little bit of that, like I hate that the only term is like modern for these composers, because I mean, modern's always what's happening right now in my mind.
Right.
Like I feel like that was just poor choice of naming. I'm like meaning like a John Cage, a John Williams, what was the piece as Hiroshima? Like somebody wrote the Hiroshima mm-hmm. piece where you had that chaotic, so it was supposed to, you know, audibly sound like what people were going through when the bomb was dropped. You know,
right. So first of all, I'm going to backtrack a minute to something you said, and I don't think my guitar lines in particular are complicated. It's how they weave in and out of each other. It's how, you know, I write. If you break the songs down one at a time, or if you break the parts down one at a time, they're very, very simple. They're actually not that complex, but when you start adding them and layering them and they weave in and out, and there's one part in, I want to say We Search, where I kind of create a minor major 11th arpeggio, but I base it on the root notes of a diminished chord. And I know I'm getting all like musically geeky on everybody, but it's that kind of thing where the line itself isn't complex, but when it meshes with the rest of the music, first of all, my brain is extremely chaotic. My brain, I went for an EEG the one time because a friend of a friend was trying to see how creative brains worked. And apparently this guy that was doing the EEG was very, very surprised at just how blatantly active my brain was. It just did not stop.
So no, that's true.
There's just always chaos in my brain. And when I pick up my guitar, that chaotic brain translates to the music. And whereas each individual line might be simple, you know, they just keep layering and layering and layering until it's a cacophony of chaos.
Yeah, it's intricate. Very intricate. All right. So tell us about Something, the next song here.
Something Behind Me. You know, Something Behind Me is the quintessential. Okay, I joke that this album is heavy metal Scooby-Doo. Something Behind Me is Shaggy and Scooby walking down the hallway. And the eyes in the picture following along. It literally, when I wrote this album, when I went to write the lyrics for this album, I actually took all of the points of a schlock horror movie. And I just did plot point this happened, you know, dead relative shows up in the middle of the day, blah, blah, blah. And I just did all of these, you know, if you take a schlock horror movie, a schlock haunted house movie, I took all of the basic plot points and I wrote a song around each of those plot points. So, you know, I kind of think of Something Behind Me as Scooby-Doo and Shaggy walking down the hall and the eyes in the picture just kind of following along. But every time they turn around, you know, the eyes close and they don't see anything.
All right. Well, without further ado.
So it's like heavy metal with a sense of humor. Because what is it if it doesn't have a sense of humor?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's definitely humor going through all this here. So without further ado then, Something Behind Me. Vice and Valor. So Sue, on this one, what was going on there in the bridge, like the keyboards? It really gave me a Strawberry Fields kind of vibe, like a Mellotron.
Well, so yes, he did use a Mellotron on this.
If you want
to know what was going on in Bob's head, I'm afraid you're going to have to ask Bob I'm afraid of what's going on in my own head. So I generally am very afraid of what's going on in other people's heads. but no, Bob did a Mellotron, and he, at one point, he was sending me a thing going, oh, I use this here and I use that there and I use this here and I use that there. And me being a guitarist, I was like, oh, pretty keyboard sounds. And then he stopped telling me what he was using where, but yes, I do believe he used a Mellotron there, and Bob has an amazing setup. When we did the Darkest Night, the Darkest Night video, he brought his pared down setup to the video shoot, and I was like, wait, this is pared down?
That's cool.
Wow. So Bob has all of the keyboard things. Bob plays all of the keyboard things. it's amazing. And again, Jeremy Papai on drums, Nico Ricci on bass for everything except Mystery and Mayhem, Not Myself, and Dark as Night. I actually played the bass on those three. But Nico Ricci played bass on everything else. Melissa Jimenez on vocals.
Rock on, man. Rock on. All right. So let's talk about the bonus tracks, right? Because we've got one track left, and then we'll be out of here. But before we get to that, let's talk about the other things that are available, like on Bandcamp. Because I thought this was kind of neat.
Only available on Bandcamp, actually.
Yeah, because there's a different version of Dark as Night, right? Is that it or no?
There is a different version of Dark as Night. In keeping with the haunted album concept, my album was cursed for the first, I don't know, 2.5 years of its incarnation, 3 years.
Oh, yeah, that was a rough go, man. I was there with you every step of the way and just, whoof, that was a rough go.
And it was, we'll call it a learning experience, an extended learning experience. And what we, there were many, many singers. The first singer was actually Amanda. And Amanda and I are still friends. Hopefully we'll be hanging out, you know, COVID and all that, but hopefully we will be hanging out again. And Amanda called me the one day and said, I really like you. You're my friend, but this isn't my kind of music. I'm a jazz singer and a pop singer. So let's go get coffee. And we did, because coffee, you know, I was like, oh, I'm sad, but coffee. So we went and got coffee. Then there was a long line of 4 or 5 or 6 other singers, and until I found Melissa. And Melissa has been amazeballs. I found her on Fiverr. So my singer came to me from Fiverr, and she is actually in Argentina. So it was great. And of course, y'all know how much of a Tarja fan I am. The whole Argentina thing, I was like, okay, Finnish chick living in Argentina. Now my singer's from Argentina. I'm a happy girl right now. I'm happy. I'm happy. So, you know, it was one of those, there were a long line of singers. I would really like for singers. It is. Well, our first singer spontaneously combusted. Boom. There's one singer in there that I feel did not get a fair shake. And that was Kat Lewandowski, who actually ended up, who was the one that we were doing the scratch tracks with for Not Myself when we caught that EVP. And so I would actually like to work with Kat again and see if we can come together on something, because I think Kat really went above and beyond, and I really felt badly. At the time, you know, there were some circumstances going on. She just couldn't climb over the music. But I really think with a little time and effort, I think she would be a great asset to any one of my projects that are going on.
Well, that's cool.
But yes, the original Darkest Night singer was with it, or the original Darkest Night version was with a different singer. And that singer, through no fault of the singer's own, through no fault of the singer at all, there were some mess ups where we had to switch studios. I had to switch studios. And when I switched studios, there were some glitches with getting the tracks bounced over from one studio to the other. And it ended up that we only had one usable track left from the original singer. So we ended up making the decision that I'm just going to re-record everything. And we're going to use Melissa, who at that point had done Not Myself, and had done all five of the new songs. So it just made more sense to bring her back in to recut the first three songs and have that continuity throughout the album.
Oh, yeah. That totally makes sense. So what led to doing an instrumental version of Mystery and Mayhem? Because, again, that being one of my favorite tracks on the album, I was pretty stoked about that.
So we were working on, well, when I was working with the previous studio, we were working with the goal of actually having to do some sync licensing. So, you know, looking to get some TV stuff, some video game stuff, whatever kind of fits in with my album, video games, TV, Netflix, whatever, you know. So we were looking at doing that. So in order to do that, I would need vocal-less versions of each of the songs. And the instrumental version of Mystery and Mayhem was actually the first one that came through. I actually didn't get the vocal version from the previous studio I'd gotten, but I did get the instrumental version. So that was out of a desire to expand my horizons and conquer the world more efficiently.
I love it. Absolutely love it. And if you're going for instrumental versions, I can't wait to hear an instrumental of Vice and Valor. Because I dig all the sounds on that. Like the arrangement, just so cool.
Well, between you, me, and the lamppost, I already have that.
Okay, well, share with me later offline. Everybody forget you heard this.
This is all top secret stuff. You're all not allowed to hear this right now.
Yeah, don't listen. But anyway, so since tomorrow is Halloween, right? Yes. Let's talk horror movies here. Like, what's your favorite horror film?
Oh, my favorite horror movie, 1950s version of The Thing from Another World. That was one of the first movies that I got to watch. So my mom was pretty strict, you know, back in the day, in the late Cretaceous period, you know, televisions were fairly new at that point. And my mom was fairly strict about what I was allowed to watch. But Thing from Another World was one of those movies that I was allowed to watch. I was allowed to watch all like the 30s and 40s and 50s horror movies. So I have an affinity for kind of that gothic period. But my favorite one, because I do really have a thing for monsters from outer space, was The Thing from Another World.
I do not think I've ever seen that one. I need to check that one out.
So John Carpenter's The Thing is actually a more accurate, a more faithful rendition of the book that it's based on.
Gotcha. Okay.
But The Thing from Another World, I think, was a much better horror movie. And I like the 30s, 40s, 50s movies because they're not as gore. Like, they didn't have the special effects, so they had to rely on actual scare, actual horror.
Yeah.
Actual suspense and not on gore and shock.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is what I like about them. So I always have an affinity for, you know, 30s, 40s. I have an affinity for the original Wolfman. I have an affinity for the original Frankenstein and for the original Mummy and Creature from the Black Lagoon. Not the Blank Lagoon, the Black Lagoon.
Ah.
You know, I have an affinity for the, you know, those classic, the original Nostradamus, or not, I'm not, no, Nosferatu. I'm sorry, not Nostradamus.
Close enough.
I mean, close
You're
enough.
They we both, know what you mean.
Nosferatu, the original black and white silent Nosferatu was an amazing film. Amazing.
Yeah. It's funny. Like, I just sat down to watch those movies you're talking about, like the Wolfman, Frankenstein, all that sort of stuff, this Halloween season, because I was realizing, like, man, I can't remember if I've ever seen the original Wolfman. I watched The Creature from the Black Lagoon as often as it was on TV, because I love that movie. And I don't know if you remember, when we were kids in the area, like, there, one of the TV channels, I can't remember if it was for Halloween or what it was, but they were playing a bunch of those old horror movies, and every week there was a different one, and you had to go to like a 7-Eleven and get your 3D glasses or something like that. You remember that?
Yes, I do.
I remember all of us sitting around my grandparents' TV in the living room. My uncle was there. My grandmother made popcorn, and we've all got our glasses on. We're watching the, you know, the Creature from the Black Lagoon. It was so cool.
Okay, so the first horror movie I ever saw was a movie called From Hell It Came. And this was about a walking tree monster in the Amazon jungle or something. I don't know. It was a walking tree monster. So we were in Philly. This was before we moved out to Pittsburgh. So we're in Philly. We're at my Aunt Mary's house in, I think she lived in Valley Forge at the time, or Royersford. Either Valley Forge or Royersford is actually really close to Valley Forge. And Aunt Mary was always that crazy single aunt that had all the cool things. You know, she was the first one that had the convertible and all that stuff. So she had this big console TV that took up like half the living room. And she goes to start watching this From Hell It Came, which is about the walking tree monster. And my mom's like, no, I don't want the little one watching this. She's only 3 years old or 4 years old or however, 3 or 4 years old. So my Aunt Mary runs upstairs to go watch the movie. And who's like right behind her? Snip, 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 jump right into bed alongside with her going, I'm going to watch the walking tree monster. This is great.
This really explains a lot.
I still don't understand why walking tree monsters are afraid of quicksand. I didn't catch that part, but you know, who knows?
Yeah, plot holes don't matter when it's that old. But man, I am so with you on those older movies, like from the 30s, 40s, 50s. They were really still making a film. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't a horror film. It was a film with suspense.
Right.
Yeah. Like, man, I really, really am loving them. I'm going back. I actually bought Monster Squad today from 1987.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've never seen that. And like, I remember hearing about it. I've never watched it. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to go get it. I had a couple Amazon credits. I ended up getting it for like a buck. So I started watching that. I'm like, this is fun. Like I just, man, I just enjoy like a good, fun horror movie. I love the classic monsters, you know?
I love the classic monsters. The Wolfman was always my favorite. I don't know why. I've always had a special affinity for werewolves.
Me too.
The Blob. That was a good one. I love the Blob. So upset when I thought the Blob ate the puppy and then the puppy was alive at the end. I was like, yes, screw you, Blob. The puppy lived. It was great.
So let me tell you about the Blob, right? And I wish my mom was calling in for this one because she'd tell you the story. I think it was actually Son of Blob, but I watched it on broadcast TV in the middle of the day, and I was somewhere between 8 and 10, right? Like mm-hmm. I can kind of remember the period a little bit, but I was so stinking terrified of that movie. Like I slept with the light on for at least 2 to 3 days, possibly a week.
Never went into a walk-in freezer after that, did you?
Oh, my mom will tell you that I didn't eat Jell-O for years. Like I didn't even want to look at Jell-O. Like I was freaked out, like so freaked out. It's one of those few movies that just scarred me, you know?
You don't put Jell-O. Is this a bad time for me to tell you I put gelatin in my tea?
Yeah, bad time. Definitely don't tell me that. Yeah, don't tell me that. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. We're good.
Okay, that was just tough.
All right, so we've got one song left here, right? The last song is We Search. So how about you tell us about that song, and then we'll call it a night. And again, I want to thank you for being here and letting us debut your album, Sue.
Thank you. This was so much fun. This was so much fun. Thank you so much for doing this. This was great. Thank you everybody for joining in on the chat. I know Todd's still with us. Emily's still with us. Melcina's still with us. Jackie's actually sitting right next to me, making fun of me as we talk.
Rock on.
You know, Kat Corelli is still with us. Hopefully there are some. So I think Bill Damiano is still in the house, which by the way, shout out to Bill. Bill does Build the Scene. Bill does PA Rock Show. He has a couple of really, really great podcasts. So check out Bill Damiano on Facebook and Bill's telling me to plug the website. What website do you want me to plug, Bill? Help me out, Bill. Oh, my website. Okay.
dgregorio.bandcamp.com, right? Because that's where people can go to buy the album. And again, the code to save 10% is radioactive. So dgregorio.bandcamp.com.
And we will be putting the shiplap on the site either today or tomorrow, depending on how drunk I am right now.
That's fair. That's good, right? Because I mean, heck, it's your release party. You can drink if you want to. I see what I did there. But and also dgregoriomusic.com. So dgregorio music.com. And that's where you can also go to, you know, stay up on everything D Gregorio, but also you can get the story, right? And I'm going to tell you, listen to the album once, just, you know, put on a set of headphones and just kind of enjoy it, but then go back and listen again, reading the story.
Okay. And I want to take one more plug here. Buildthescene.com.
Oh, rock on.
That is Bill Damiano's website, and Bill does, oh my God, I can't say enough nice things about Bill. Oh my God. Bill does, first of all, he's an incredible webmaster. He's done, all of my Danielle's still online. My friend Danny is online. Thank you, Danielle. But Bill Damiano has done so much for the scene. He does websites for all the bands. He's actually done my website. He is my webmaster. He has buildthescene.com. And he runs, I think, 3 different podcasts. And then Danielle, actually, a.k.a. Inez, is actually an R&B artist here in Pittsburgh. I'm sorry, Danny, that I didn't see you online earlier. But Inez is actually an R&B artist on Pittsburgh. I actually played on her song Love by Inez, which is available on all of the local, you know, all of the usual places, iTunes, Bandcamp, all of
that. Okay, that Inez. Okay.
Yes.
Because that's the song where I'm like, that's you?
Yes. Yes. I never heard you. Who knew I could play R&B? I didn't know I could play R&B.
I love that track. Rock on, Inez, man. Rock on. Oh, I love that track.
So, Inez, it looks like we've got you a... It looks like we've got you a slot here, but she is actually, I believe, working on her second album. Her first album, Emails and Conversations, was amazeballs. You should all check that out. Inez is one of those wonderful people. Inez and Emily Plazek, who's also in the chat tonight, those wonderful people who are like half my age, are just so much smarter than me, billions of things more than me. They're just so smart, and they have actually been mentoring me. Inez and Emily have both been mentoring me and, you know, giving me, I'm going to say, nudge through the goalpost. It's more like a kick in the ass.
But... I was going to say, sometimes you need a kick. I've known you for a long time here. I know your secrets.
yes, you have. So both Inez and Emily have been nudging me through the goalposts. They've just been there. It's actually been quite an amazing experience. I'm actually sitting here with my friends Jackie and Ray, and my friends Josh and Morgan and Cody were here, and my friend Bev was here. My friends Malcina and Dave were here. We had a little tight little gathering of very close friends here at the house. And these guys have been there for me. It's been a very interesting experience as to who
love
are.
You, Suzanne.
It's been a very interesting experience as to who my real friends are and who my real friends are not. So it's been a very interesting journey, and I would not trade it for a thing. So thank you all. I love you all.
Trying to make me cry.
I know.
Rock on. All right. So tell us about We Search.
So We Search is kind of, it's the transition song between the albums, right? So, it's another one of the ones that's mostly fictional, but it's that little nugget of information that you've got this thing and you're trying to piece together the puzzle. You know, if you look at Shaggy and Scooby and Velma and and crew, and they're all like, wait, it's a clue, Scooby-Doo. You know, it's one of those things. You know, and you're trying to trace the clue and you're looking for that last hidden thing in the actual story. It is looking for the hidden passage in the house of Di Gregorio so that they can continue exploring and continue to try and solve the mystery. But again, DiGregorioMusic.com actually has the whole story and all of the lyrics lined up because I actually wrote the story. I wrote like a short story and then took each of the lyrics directly from the story. So it was it was a very interesting experiment, actually.
That's awesome, Sue. All right. So once again, everybody, it's dgregorio.bandcamp.com, dgregoriomusic.com. Check it out. If you go to Bandcamp, use the code Radioactive Metal. You'll save 10%. That code is going to be active through Bandcamp Friday on November 6th. So not for a very long time, but enjoy it. And this is the last song here. We Search, and we're out of here. Thank you again, everybody, for being here with us. And Sue, congratulations on this album.
RadioactiveMetal.org or go to iTunes for past episodes and write a review. Listen to us live every Thursday night on PureRockRadio.net. You can also listen to us on Stitcher.com, TuneIn.com, Google Play, and all other podcast aggregators. You can purchase the music featured in this episode by going to RadioactiveMetal.org and clicking on the episode link. Leave us a voicemail. We want to hear from you. Call 321-80-HEAVY or 321-804-3289. We may even play it on the show. Email us at radmetal666@gmail.com with suggestions or for indie spotlight submissions. Follow us at facebook.com/radmetal. Twitter.com/radmetal666 and Instagram.com/radioactivemetal. This has been a presentation of Radioactive Metal. It's not metal unless it's radioactive metal.